and welcome to Happy Place. I'm Fern Cotton, and this is the show which takes us from dark, gloomy January days to somewhere altogether more inviting, in the company of a nice guest as well. Today, we're off to meet singer-songwriter Tom O'Dell.
With the anxiety, I'm pleased I became aware of it because I've adjusted my life, and there's a hell of a lot of things I do beyond the transcendental meditation to try and stay sane.
I'm always surprised when people you love and respect turn out to be as flawed as I am, so I hope you'll get as much out of this chat as I did. Stay tuned for that.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And now, here's the show. So I'm off to go and interview someone today that I'm really fond of, someone that I've had the pleasure of interviewing a lot of times. But he actually asked if he could come on the podcast, which is always a wonderful way round of things happening. He said he'd been on tour and listening to a lot of the episodes, and he was up for having a real honest chat about life and stuff. So I'm really looking forward to this because, as I said, I've chatted to him a lot, but never really gone there in a properly honest way. So we're going to go and knock on the door of the wonderful Tom O'Dell for a bit of a chat. So, Tom O'Dell, in your favourite chair in your house?
Yes, this is my happy place.
Oh, it's a lovely chair.
It is. It was picked up at a second, hand antique shop, or not antique, just second-hand furniture store.
It's a rust colour sort of throne that you're on.
I think it cost about £40, and it's literally the most comfortable chair I've ever sat in.
I'm glad you're comfy, because we're going to have a long old chat.
At some point, you should sit in it.
I'll try it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And also, you've got your lovely cat mooching about.
Yes.
Oh, your lovely cat.
That's Louis. Yeah, he's great.
He's gorgeous.
Yeah.
I'm a mad cat lady, so I'm hoping at some point he comes and just jumps up and I can have a cuddle.
Yeah, he can be quite friendly. He's quite a character. And this whole road that I live on, there's like 25 cats that
love
live
that
here.
He's out partying in the evening. He's got all his mates.
And they sort of do a sort of procession past these windows here, like 15 of them. It's very bizarre.
I love it. And out there, you've got a beautiful studio area with a very gorgeous piano there, which of course is what you are best known for and what I absolutely love you for is playing that piano.
Yes.
Why the piano? Why is that your thing?
I don't know. I mean, I have so much love for it, and it's bizarre. I almost have so much love for it. It's pretty close to that. And if you ever watched that bizarre Channel 4 documentary like 10 years ago about the people that have literally fallen in love with objects.
Oh, yeah. Like you marry a fence,
yeah,
or something like that.
Sort of trying to have sex with them and stuff. And it's still a bit bizarre. But without the sex and the strange obsession, I am absolutely in awe of the piano. I continue to be. And funnily enough, I'm doing this like bizarre documentary at the moment about the piano. And so I'm the most articulate I've ever been about why I love it. And I can tell you that I went to the Steinway piano hall the other day, last week actually, and I sat there with the head piano maker in the world or in Europe. And it's because the reason I love it is it's engineering meets art.
Mm.
And the thing that stuck with me when I was talking to this guy, and he said that, there's few objects in the world that they came across a design 250 years ago, 300 years ago. And Steinway, for example, are still making the same piano that they made in 1800.
You're not going to mess with that, are you?
No. And And you go there and it's still state of the art. Mm. It's still, you sit in these rooms with these great 9-foot pianos and you're like, what an absolute achievement of engineering. Mm. And so I absolutely love it. And once I put my knees beneath the soundboard or the keyboard and I feel like the music coming up through your body, it's just like this totally transcendent experience.
So is that the feeling for you? Because I'm so not musical, and I, you know, hence why I talk about music for a living, and I'm so intrigued by it and mesmerized constantly. Is that the feeling for you? Like it is, you know, you're channeling something. It's an energy that's coming through you when you sit down and your hands touch those keys.
Yeah, and I feel like you feel at one with this object. I'm reading this great book by this slightly controversial guy called Sam Harris at the moment. I don't know if you've come across him.
No.
But he's like, he talks a lot about like free will, but he also talks about like the fact that it's an old idea, but the fact that the self is an illusion. You know, this idea that I is, you know, we have this sort of central point inside of, that is this, you know, this constant narrative.
Yeah.
And I mean, it sounds like I'm diverging slightly, but I feel like things like the piano, you lose all sense of I and the self, and you become completely immersed in the music, and all track of time and everything seems to just disperse. And I absolutely love it. And I think that's why everyone should play a musical instrument, because I think it's just a relief from the absolute meaninglessness
of life and being a human. No, I get what you mean, because even as a music lover and someone that listens to it, I think anyone that you know loves an artist, a band or a genre of music, you can almost get like a diluted sense of that experience listening to it, and you just kind of get lost in it and you forget about stuff. But the feeling of playing it, I just can't even imagine how like just magical that must be. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Do you think it brings out the best in you?
I'm certainly better at playing the piano and singing. I'm able to express myself more clearly than I am with, like, now, for example.
And so if you're songwriting, like when you go out there and you sit at your piano, is it you're setting out to write a song. Mm. Is it, I'm going to work out some lyrics first, then the music comes? Or do you sit and just see what comes up for you emotionally and then it turns out that it manifests in a song?
Yeah, I'd say the latter. Yeah, it just sort of turns up. It's strange. I think when you try, the strange thing with it is when you try too hard, nothing comes.
Mm.
And when you sit there and try and shut off that like annoying person that keeps saying, you know, that's not good enough enough, when you, and then great things seem to arrive.
I hate that voice in our heads. It's really annoying.
It's the worst.
I get it all the time, and it's essentially fear, isn't it? And it hinders you so much. And it can be like small things in life and you think, oh, piss off, like just leave me to just do my thing. Does that affect you when you're sort of, you know, when you're writing or even performing? Does that voice kind of creep up?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and I think it is. I guess it's why a lot of musicians turn to drugs and alcohol, is because you're often trying to get rid of that very sort of, is the shallowest part of our consciousness. I think it's the most vain, the most insecure, and it's the one that most holds you back with creativity, I think. And also even in social situations, and you know, we've all sat there in a social situation and gone, what are they thinking of me? What are
they
thinking
of me? I get it every time I talk to someone.
I mean, I had it when you arrived, of course. Like, we all have it. You go,
oh
God, am I putting my arm in the right place? I know what you mean.
Yeah, isn't it funny?
It's so, and you know, we can't, and then it seems to
settle. I get it even with friends, like friends that I've had for years, when they've gone, I think, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that. That came across wrong. Do they now like the other friend better? Look, stupid, acerbic voice. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It's mad. Why do we deal with that? Why do we suffer it? It's bonkers.
Well, this chap, Sam Harris, he seems to... he's written this whole book. It's called Waking Up. But he talks a lot about the fact that that's sort of like an illusion.
Mm.
This idea of this, like, dialogue you have with yourself.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, not particularly real.
Yeah. Well, I was listening to the Eckhart Tolle and Oprah podcast, A New Earth, which is amazing.
Is it really good?
Oh, my God. Right. I've listened to the whole series three times.
Oh, great.
10 episodes. I can't get enough. And so Eckhart was says that he was falling asleep one night and he was having a really tough time before he kind of transcended into the person he is today. And he was feeling really awful and he thought about taking his own life. Mm. And then he had this one sentence arrive in his head: I really can't live with myself anymore. And then he stopped and went, wait a minute, if I'm saying I can't live with myself, there must be two of me, and I am myself.
Yeah.
And then he made that exact separation. And I keep going back to that and thinking about that. Because I think we all do deal with that insecurity of this personality that we've kind of created, or a bit of it is our essence and we are, but what others think of it. And it's so silly that we constantly ruminate on that.
Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it?
It's annoying. It's very annoying.
Distracting. I've been thinking a lot about it in the past few months, and one of the things that has really led me is transcendental meditation, which has really been quite insightful.
When did you get into that?
I got into it 2.5 years ago.
What was the reason? Was there a moment where you thought, I need this, or I just want to try it?
It was my ex-girlfriend, actually. She suggested we do it, and we went to a place to learn how to do it. And I've done it twice a day, pretty much every day since.
Wow, that is exactly as it should be, and I need to do it. I'm like, I know how good it is for me when I do it. I'm not dedicated. I need to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many different types of meditation. It's also, they're probably all good, but I certainly am a massive fan of it, and I think everybody should do it.
So for people that are very new to talking about meditation or looking into it, what sets transcendental meditation apart from other types?
From what I can tell is that a lot of the sort of more yogi meditation is that you're concentrating on breathing and you're listening to your surroundings and feeling your surroundings, and by that you sort of, your breathing becomes controlled and you meditate. With transcendental meditation, it's you're given a mantra and it's you're repeating that mantra silently in your head, but you're allowing some thoughts to come into your mind, and then you very politely sort of show them the door.
Yeah.
But never sort of like, you know, shoving them out.
They come and they go like clouds.
Yes.
Passing clouds.
Exactly, yeah. And that works out. And eventually, I don't know, like the first time I ever did it, I really felt something powerful.
Like what?
Very first. It was just this sensation of enjoying being alive.
Wow.
That without any fix or any sort of vice, you know, like when I'm trying to give up smoking permanently, but when I smoke a cigarette, I go like this and I enjoy being alive. Or when I take a sip of wine, or if you have sex, or like if you go for a run and afterwards But the point is with this meditation is you're not...
There's nothing to attain.
There's no exterior that's providing that joy. It's completely found from within. Mm. And I don't always get it. And so it's a discipline. And sometimes, you know, it's not very kind with its, like, you know, amount of pleasure it gives you. Which pleasure is probably the wrong word, but...
Contentment? You know, is it contentment?
Yeah, contentment. But it's
grounding.
But it's a deep feeling. It's a very also visceral feeling that's not... It's not mistakable for... You're not fooling yourself.
No.
It's like, wow. And you really... I've learned a lot from it in the sense that I'm a lot calmer, but also there's this buzz. There's a buzz. There's just this buzz that I feel exists when you're alive, and it's like it's very low, and when I meditate I can just about hear it. And it's And it's not tinnitus.
Good. So we don't want that wrecking your career. But it's that, it's the energy, isn't it?
Yeah.
That we often, I guess, dismiss because we are looking for those exterior pleasures, goals, yeah. things that we think are going to fill a hole that we think we've, you know, got burning inside us. It's like you say, connecting with, we've all got that joy inside us. It's just sometimes it feels buried quite deep down and it's accessing it. And this for you is the portal to accessing that amazing joy.
And I think there's lots of portals.
Yeah.
And I think people going on just to walk, like my parents, they go on a walk twice a day.
I love a walk.
Yeah, and I can see they get so much joy out of that. And some people play football every evening or, I know, but for me, I found it to be much more effective than all those other things I've tried.
Mm. I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, I've known you for a while now, since you started out. I mean, when, I don't even know when it was.
2012, I think.
God, was it? Bloody hell. So yeah, a while.
Yeah, a while.
And I sort of feel like I've got my version of what I believe Tom Odell is in my head. But of course, there's always so much more to it. And I was looking through lots of different interviews that you'd done over the last sort of couple of years, because I probably haven't interviewed you for a couple of years now. And one line really stuck out, and it was a new side of you that I, you know, had overlooked or not heard about before. And you kind of quite succinctly talked about the fact that you have or still do experience anxiety and sort of a low level omnipresent anxiety in life. Is that still the case?
Yes. Yeah. And yeah. And I wasn't aware it had a name until it all exploded last year. I think it was something I'd felt probably since I was a teenager.
Really?
Yeah, and I just thought that was me. Like, I was slightly manic, and I thought that's what it was like to be alive. And then last year, I went for a very painful breakup with someone who I love very much, still love very much, And then it was work, you know, lots of work and all that. And then I'd been feeling strange for about a month and was increasingly worried about how I felt because I had no idea. I couldn't define what it was that I felt. And then one day I just completely sort of collapsed in the shower in Munich with not being able to breathe. And it was a very, very severe panic attack. And I ended up in an ambulance and in a hospital. And it was absolutely terrifying. And it was a horrendous month afterwards where a slammed door next door could send me into an absolute mess of nerves. And since then I've been dealing with it, and I'm a lot better now.
Had you had a lot of panic attacks before this, or was this the first one that manifested from anxiety?
Never had anything, but I now realise that I probably had things that I'd written off as, you know, sort of a lack of sleep or, you know, just, I realised now there were moments that were close to panic, but never had I had anything that was like, I thought I was dying, you know, like in this panic attack. I genuinely did not know what a panic attack was either. And it was, I thought a panic attack was, you know, pacing up and down going, oh my God, am I going to get fired? And focusing on one thing. I always thought anxiety was worrying about one specific thing, when the anxiety that I felt, I can never really pinpoint what the concern is. It might, the spark of that horrendous fire might be one individual thing, but then the anxiety I feel is this deep sense of doom, that everything is just going to crumble like a sandcastle.
And was there one particular trigger when you were in Munich that you think set you off on this, or it was just an accumulation of years of,
I know
of
a single came out that day, that morning, which could be something to do with it, because I'd worked very hard on this song and I was worried about how it's going to be received, but it wasn't that specifically. But why I really wanted to talk about it as well is that I've since had a few friends who have had similar things. And I was talking to a friend the other day and he was telling me he wanted to speak about it with me, and he was telling me all about what he's been through recently, and real horrendous, similar age, and it seems to be quite, you know, around late 20s. I definitely think there's a common...
I do.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a coincidence. I think,
it's a coincidence.
There's a statistic out there and it's saying everything, you know. Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah. I'm very fortunate that when I went through this, I didn't feel any shame, really. I felt, probably because I'm a, you know, we're very lucky within this industry that we're all basically allowed to be a bunch of narcissistic. we love talking about ourselves, hence this lovely podcast.
I made a living out of it.
Yeah, exactly. So we have that vocabulary to be able to discuss it, and we have the friends around us that perhaps a little bit just happy to talk about that stuff. But then it suddenly occurred to me that when my friend was telling me about it, and he went through a very similar experience, and he then added to this experience this terrible shame, like he was a failure. Mm. And it really like struck something within me of that, Jesus, it was hard enough going through this thing, this anxiety, you know, and without this then added sort of masculine, or it doesn't have to be male, but I think there is an individual issue there with men of this sort of deep shame of, you know, and not talking about it because they don't want to be seen to be wusses.
I totally relate, because I don't know if I felt shame when I had one particular period where I was having a lot of panic attacks back to back. And my first ever one was on the motorway in a car going really fast. So now,
driving.
I still haven't built up the kind of nerve, I guess, to get back on the motorway. And I will, and
I'm
will
not
happen.
Surprised.
But I just think I'm not going to rush. But for a bit, when I would do usually something live on the TV, that little like sick bit of my brain would go, oh, this would be a bad time.
I could feel
it coming on. But then I started to almost tap into what your friend's saying. And I would think, oh my God, why do none of my peers have this? Why are they just so confident and relaxed? And why am I such a freak? Maybe I'm not cut out for this. And I think it is quite commonplace that you will add that layer of you're a failure. You know, it is such a shame. And I think by what you're doing is really wonderful, you know, starting to talk about this. And I'm really glad that you felt comfortable enough to do that today, because so many people that do look up to you or follow your career and love what you do, to see what's going on beneath that, and for you to say, you know, this has happened to me, I don't feel ashamed or whatever, is connecting all of us with people going through a similar experience to not feel alienated, which is 100%. A shitty place to be at when you're already going through something.
And also I feel, had I had listened to your podcast, or had I been a little bit more aware of what was going on, I think the panic attacks, or aware of sort of, you know, these kind of mental illnesses and stuff, is I think the panic attack that I did have probably wouldn't have been quite so bad, because half of the panic attack, as you all know, is you going,
What's happening?
What the fuck is going on? Why is my heart beating? I feel like I can't breathe. What am I having a stroke? You know, like and then that's sort of like self-perpetuated and it gets worse and worse. And but also, you know, not just the physical symptoms, you just go, why am I thinking like this? This is insane. And you realize, like, people in psychosis and like these severe mental illnesses, you realize the power of it. I mean, I always thought it was just like, I don't know, I was so delusional about mental illness before that now, you know.
And do you think, like you say, you know, a lot of your friends have experienced or are going through a similar thing, and we know that a lot of young people out there, I mean, all ages, but, you know, the sort of young generations are feeling a lot more anxiety than perhaps has been expressed previously. Do you think there is sort of a general overwhelm that everyone is just feeling slightly sort of bombarded with everything, and also expectation? Because I don't know if this plays into it, but the other day I was with a bunch of family members on my husband's side, and I was chatting to one of his relatives, and she was saying that she's got to be in her late teens now, daughter, who I'm going to give a shout out to, Nell, because she came up with something quite brilliant. She said to her mum one day, when did the extraordinary become normal? And I thought, God, that's so a sign of the times, that sort of like zeitgeist thing of you have to achieve the maximum every day, and everything has to be amazing, look amazing, you have to have the best job. And, you know, I don't think many generations before this generation have experienced that. It was fine to plod along and do your thing and to find happiness and joy in the average, which is sort of underestimated, I think, in this day and age. Just things being, you know, today was average, fine, good, you know, that's a good thing.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, like, it's like if you go to the Mediterranean, you know, like, they're so, you know, I have Italian cousins, and it's so much about family and getting together on a Sunday. And
community.
And community, and I can't help but feel sometimes maybe it was like, Instagram slightly replaced like the church in some ways. And the church had a, you know, as we know, has a hell of a lot of its own problems, but I can't work out if maybe Instagram has even more.
Well, because it's not a genuine connection, is it? It's lovely as a tool to go, oh, this person has the same thing going as me or whatever, but there's nothing beats sitting with someone and having that connection and talking. And I've certainly found with me getting out of my own little weird situations or, you know, my panic attacks more so now come at night when I'm trying to go to bed. Really handy.
Really?
Yeah, so I get the heart racing thing and all sorts. But the thing I've found most helpful is learning really good breathing techniques and stuff like that. But to
go back to your previous question, I think that is a very interesting point. I guess there's a interesting question is there more now? I guess one thing is maybe more of us allowed to talk about it now. So it could feel like there's more now, and it's always been there. Or it could be, I actually think there is more now. And I think the pressure on young people is quite terrifying. I can't imagine what it's like to have like teenagers and that minefield of like social media. Yeah. Because, you know, like there's a hell of a lot of, I mean, I don't even know where I'd begin with that stuff. Like, I feel like I was the sort of last generation that didn't, you know, we started having like Facebook when I was like 16, 17 or something. But the really vulnerable bit of my teenage years were pretty offline. And yet I think the kids maybe like 4 years below me, they were the first ones that
had...
I mean, I had like MSN Messenger.
See, I even missed that. I'm so old. I didn't even do that.
You got out unscathed.
I did. I actually had the first, I think, probably 4 or 5 years of my career internet free, like social media free. Dream.
I yearn for.
Well, I don't now. My, that's for sure. Bloody hell! Just don't look at it. Is the key there?
Yeah. Oh my God.
But how? I mean, so this is the thing. So, you know, transcendental meditation has been a real remedy or certainly something that's helped mitigate some of that for you?
I don't know. I'm not sure. It definitely is not like anything in life. It should, these great fixes, you know, the great sort of like, it's not the answer to everything, but I find it helps. And I feel in some ways it enriches my life. But I think with the anxiety, it's as much, I'm pleased I became aware of it because I've adjusted my life. And there's a hell of a lot of things I do now beyond the transcendental meditation to try and stay sane. And it's as much about getting a good night's sleep and, you know, like not drinking too much. But also I find personally just, and this is when it's going to get really hippy dippy, but
go for it.
But like, I think as a English middle class man, which I always struggle to define myself as, I still feel like a boy. I think also just to be open and honest, and for many years I could be so emotive and expressive, as you know, in my music, and I say the most honest, you know, naked sort of things, and yet in my own personal life I struggle to tell a friend that I love them, or I struggle to, you know, call up, I don't know, just be vulnerable, to be vulnerable and not be this bulletproof successful musician. I really have struck, that's been something I'm really trying to change, like I'm really trying to change that kind of just be vulnerable and honest and try and be loving, because I have loads of love and I've always had loads of love in my heart, but I just have sometimes struggled to actually give that to people. I give it a lot in my music, but
I think it's so often the case with creative people that, yeah, you know, especially of musicians, you can say, like, you know, as you said, the most exposing lyric that says, yeah, everything, and you could pick apart a lyric and go, wow, I think I've really tapped into something Tom's going through there, but then, yeah, in your real life it's such a different place to be at. Your album The Wrong Crowd, yeah, I always wondered with that particular title and where you're at with your career then, was that kind of a period of exploration where you were like, right, now I'm a successful musician, who am I hanging out with? And you got swayed slightly into different groups of people there that weren't quite the right fit?
Maybe a bit of that, yeah. I think definitely, yeah. And that first few years, you know, like, it really is a... You suddenly get the keys to, you know, like, a city that you didn't know existed. When you're, like, 24, you know, you said you just did Sam Fender, and I met him the other day for the first time at the... I really like his music. I met him at the Rocket Man premiere, you know, because we're stars and we go to premieres.
Well, you're mates with Elton, we'll let you off. It's all good.
And I was just looking at him and I was just like, wow, because I really remember, yeah, what that was like.
Yeah.
At that, right, at the starting blocks, and it's just all just so, like, fucking crazy. But yeah, I don't know. I think it also, Wrong Crowd was also about the fact that I've constantly not felt, I've always been outside the frosty glass of the pub looking indoors and looking at the groups there, and everyone seems so happy, and everyone, yeah, seems like they've got their friendship groups and their girlfriends and their lives sorted, and they know exactly who they are, and it's as if they've always being that person, and yet I feel so transient, and like one heavy gust of wind could blow me off into the cosmos. And so I think that's what Wrong Crowd's about more, is just feeling like I never quite fit in.
Yeah. Do you still feel that now?
I feel less with each year. I feel less and less like that, but actually maybe I don't know. I feel more, I tell you, I don't feel like I fit in anymore now, but I feel like I accepted who I am more. And I think that's a really lovely thing that you notice amongst friends as you get into your late 20s. It's like you begin going, oh, that's fine. I don't have to be everyone.
Yeah.
And I don't have to be, you know, and you begin to just go, I don't know. It's a nice feeling.
You care less.
You care less.
You care less.
Yeah.
This might sound peculiar, but whenever I've sort of interviewed, especially very creative people that sort of, and again, I guess it is, you know, musicians or artists who really are perhaps driven by the momentum of sometimes quite tricky feelings. Do you ever worry that if you didn't feel that discomfort or anxiety that you would have less to write about, or there'd be less momentum musically for you?
Yeah, and it's a problem, that.
Really?
And I think it's true.
Like, if you were just content,
I know,
would you think, oh shit, I've got no songs?
I can't work out if that's an illusion, or, but I certainly felt it. And it, feeling too comfortable, You know, I know David Bowie said it a lot. I've read in interviews he used to say, you know, once an artist feels comfortable, you're, you know, too comfortable, it's like game over. Mm. And it's like
terrifying.
I know, and it's just like, you know, and it, but quite honestly, and look, I don't think this life and this job I have, there's far harder jobs in the world, and in a lot of ways, I'm so fortunate, and I'm so fortunate that I've earned money making music, and I have a career in it. And it's easy. It's actually, you know, people that work in the mines, they have it hard, or the countless jobs that are difficult, you know, doctors, nurses that work 14 hours a day. I'm always very hesitant to complain about this job. But one thing I would say is to the artists that take it seriously, and I count myself within that, and I do take it very seriously, and I find that it is a sacrifice that has become more and more apparent to me only after I've done it. Mm. The sacrifice it requires to continue doing it to a degree that, and that sacrifice is quite elusive, I think. It's like, it's not just the traveling, it's not just the being away from home, but it's also the degree of, like, to write something emotional, it does take something out of you that you then don't maybe have that later that evening. I don't know. It's like, I'm not being very articulate in this response, but I think there is a great sacrifice that it takes. And I think in answer to your question, I have felt that a lot, as I don't want to get too comfortable. And I think I've damaged a lot of relationships in that way. And I
would, really?
Yeah. And I regret that. But I also don't, so it's strange.
So you want to kind of almost teeter on the edge of things being a bit uncomfortable, just to kind of test yourself or push yourself or see what comes up.
But then I'm like, that can't be it. So then that can't. But then you go, that I'm like, I don't know. It's like a choice, isn't it? I think it's a choice.
But maybe then, like you were saying, the fear of being vulnerable in your life, maybe being, like, relaxing into contentment is the most vulnerable place you can be at.
Maybe.
For you.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, you know, like, to counter that argument, this ridiculous argument I'm making that you have to be, you know, it has to be a mess, is actually, like, I think, you know, what I'm saying about transcendental meditation is the opposite. It's like, I find it to be the most creative, like, little 20 minutes I sort of practice. And you know, if I meditate and then I go and sit at the piano, often that's when the best ideas come.
Oh, I bet.
And that's complete contentment. That's
So when you're doing that, what is the result for you, the desired result? When you perhaps have meditated, or you've just gone to the piano and you want to write, obviously every time, the greatest song ever written, is the result that you want figuring out what this life is all about? Is it connection with other people? Is it to process your own feelings? Like, what do you think your reasoning is behind it, or the result you want?
I think ultimately I sit at the piano, and when I get a melody or a lyric and a piece of music that comes together, you completely escape. It just adds so much colour, and it's the most excitement I ever feel. And it's so, you know, like, I'm in that studio down at the end of the garden. I'm dancing around when I get something good, and time just disappears, and I get the hairs on the back of my neck, and I believe that there's something more. Like, it's this belief that it feels like it feels there's something more to this world than what just is on the surface. It's incredibly, like, just moving. It's the same for when you go to a concert and it's your favourite song, and you sit there and you hear this song, and it just, I don't know, it's what I live for, I think. Mm. Yeah.
Well, don't ever stop doing it,
because yeah,
I bloody love your music, as do many other people out there. So,
oh, thanks.
You know, don't keep, you know, always teeter on the edge of having a nervous breakdown. But, you know, keep making good music and we're happy.
Yeah.
Tom, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
For inviting us to your home today.
Yeah.
And for
pleasure.
Chatting. So honestly, I think for many people out there, just hearing you talk about an experience like that will be massively helpful. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Thank you, Tom.
Oh, I loved that. Much love to you and best of luck with all of the amazing work that you're doing. If this is your first experience of Happy Place, you can discover over 50 interviews with inspiring, wonderful people on the podcast feed. Just hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on your podcast app of choice. And to find out who's on next week's show, find us on Instagram at Happy Place Official. Thanks again to Tom, to the producer Matt Hill at Rethink Audio, and to you for listening. I'll see you Monday.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.